All right, how's everybody doing? Welcome to Monday. Hopefully everybody had a great weekend. What great weather, huh? Holy cow, incredible weather here in Chicago. Finally, I love the heat, and I was treated to the heat today. This whole weekend, man. It was unbelievable. So hopefully everybody had a safe holiday weekend. It is Tuesday. Did I just say Monday? It's Tuesday. That's what happens on a holiday weekend. All right. It's Tuesday, and welcome to Chicago Music Revealed. Of course, I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and the Director of Programming and Entertainment at the soon-to-be-opening Epiphany Center for the Arts right there on 201 South Ashland Avenue. We're going to be opening up in September with 7 nights a week of music. Stick around for those announcements. They're going to be coming up in a couple of weeks. Very excited about the whole situation over there. We are cranking along, and we are going to make it work even in the days of COVID-19. We are going to make it work. We're planning for a very safe, COVID-free situation over there. So stay tuned for the announcement, but we're going to have some great acts, and that will be posted very soon. But today on the show, I am, without further ado, I could sit here and pontificate, but nobody wants to hear me pontificate. Let's talk to Brandon Meeks. I'm going to bring him on. And man, I was talking to him just before we went live, and he's on the phone here today. And, you know, he and I could probably talk for, three, 4 hours about everything he's got going on without even thinking about it. But we're going to talk not for 3 or 4 hours. So I'm going to try to bop around and focus on a lot of stuff. He's an accomplished bassist. He's also one of the members of Native Son, which is a hip-hop R&B group, which is very interesting. They use live instruments and hip-hop music along with samples and stuff, which we're going to talk about. He was also in the movie Miles Ahead. He played the legendary bassist Ron Carter in that movie, and a whole lot more. So, Brandon, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. And before we even get started into all of that, how are you holding up during this COVID-19 situation? Because, I mean, you're like a lot of musicians. You're constantly playing gigs and creating. And all of a sudden now you've kind of probably had to hunker down, and you're in your home studio, I would imagine, and working on things. But you're not playing gigs right now. So how have you been coping with this whole thing?
It's actually been pretty good for me at first, just with the onset of it being so fast. It was a little jarring,
yeah.
but I'm kind of, even though I'm a musician, I'm kind of an internet guy too. So like, I've been trying to make as most of my business be online as I possibly can, even before this started happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a pretty smooth transition to, doing most of my work online. And then I'm like one of those personalities that's kind of introverted anyway, so I don't mind like the social distancing. Like I'm fine when I'm on stage, but I'm good being to myself and just working on my thing. So yeah, it's overall been pretty cool for me. You know?
I mean, it's interesting talking to you because you started off with saying that you're an internet guy, and that's obviously because of your age and because of what you've been doing with all the different genres of music. But, you know, I'm a big believer in, and I've been saying this on the show, and those of you that have been watching the show know what I'm saying, is that I think that this is the kind of time that a lot of musicians, a lot of creators are going to figure out how to utilize the internet in a lot of different ways so that,
yeah, absolutely,
you know, so that they can push music out and find even a larger audience. And, you know, talking about you, I mean, you know, we can talk about a lot of different things, but since we're talking about the internet stuff, you released some of the recordings and some of the videos for Native Son, the group that you're in. And man, you got like 500,000 hits, a million hits on some of those things. I mean, talk about reaching a large audience. That would it.
Yeah, it's, the time we're in right now, it's kind of like sink or swim. So it's kind of interesting to see all the musicians that are making that transition and really putting themselves out there in new ways. So I'm excited for everybody that's getting out there and doing their thing.
Well, and that's the thing too. I mean, and you're in so many different genres. So let's talk a little bit about the jazz genre, because
Sure.
You know, looking over your bio, checking out all your music, and getting more familiar with all your playing. Obviously, I knew of Native Son, and I knew of some of the other groups you play in. JD, JD Allen's going to be on the show. I think he's planning. I think we're scheduling him to be on the show, so that's interesting. I know you play with him, but
oh, cool, yeah, I did a run with JD. It might have been a couple of years ago now, but yeah, JD's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you get interested? I mean, did you listen to jazz? I mean, for somebody that's your age to be so accomplished and performing jazz, hip-hop, R&B, all the different styles, I mean, how did you find the bass, I guess, is the first question. How did you get drawn to the bass?
The city of Chicago had almost everything to do with it. So, like, I started playing electric bass, like, as a teenager. And when I got into college, like, just being – I went to Columbia College, graduated from there. But just being downtown in Chicago and just being around just so many creative people. Like, Columbia College has a building on Wabash. At the time, the Hot House was, like, right across the street.
Oh,
they would have sessions
right.
there every month. The Velvet Lounge is still going. Fred Anderson was around. Chicago Jazz Festival in Grant Park is, like, basically right across the street from one of Columbia College's buildings. Mm-hmm. So, like, and also Orchestra Hall, where they would have, like, different jazz artists coming in for their jazz series. So I would, like, try to go to all of that stuff. Even though I was in school as a graphic designer, I always had an interest in music. And once I just started just seeing some of the musicians and hearing, like, the conviction and the energy of the music, I was just completely drawn to it. And since I already played electric bass, upright bass just seemed to be like the most natural entry point for me to get in on the music. But yeah, definitely without the city of Chicago, I probably never really would have taken the interest in the music that I had. It was just, you know, it was just all around me at the time, and I couldn't help but get into it.
So you were playing, you were playing electric bass. Were you studying electric bass anywhere or with anyone, or did you just pick it up on your own and start learning tunes and learning the bass on your own?
Yeah, as far as bass is concerned, that's pretty much how it happened. To kind of give you the full picture, I got into music in general at about 9 years old. I was taking lessons in classical guitar.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so from 9 years old all the way through high school, like, I studied with, like, different classical guitarists and even some classical guitar professors at the college level I would do private instruction with.
Wow.
So that was, like, my introduction to music. But I initially wanted to play bass, but my parents, you know, not being musicians themselves, they felt like, well, you know, bass is kind of a background instrument. You should play guitar. You know, so that's what they got me, and that's what I played. You know,
so well, they weren't completely wrong, right? I mean, they weren't completely wrong, so I guess that makes sense. But you were drawn. Yeah, you must have been drawn to the bass, because I mean, to switch from classical guitar and being out in front to playing the bass and learning the bass, that had to be something that you just were drawn to, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So I finally got my chance, like, my first chance to play it in middle school, like, when the bass player for the school jazz band, they kind of moved on to high school, and they just needed somebody to play. And a friend of mine who played drums, he just talked me into, like, hey, man, you should try out for the jazz band. We need somebody to play. And I was like, okay, well, I've been wanting to play bass anyway, and this is a good excuse for me to do it. So you know, I just jumped into it, started practicing with the school's bass, listening to tunes on the radio at the time, and just trying to figure out stuff by ear. I could read some treble clefs, so I figured out how to read bass clefs as well, you know, and mm-hmm. just took it and ran with it after that point.
Wow, that's awesome. So what kind of music were you listening to back then?
This we're talking like early to mid 90s. So I was listening to like tons of hip hop. And then so like West Coast hip hop was real popular at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like I was listening to all of that, like all the Dr. Dre and Snoop stuff.
Yep.
All the Tupac stuff. And then of course, like, Southern rap was really starting to get a foothold, so I was really checking out Outkast really heavy, especially since they had basically like live musicians producing all of their music, like basically writing and producing all the music.
Mm.
And so I was really drawn to that because they had like, they were really like going back and digging into like some Curtis Mayfield and Earth, Wind & Fire and Frankie Beverly and Maze to make like the first couple of Outkast albums. So I was really like checking out that music and picking up on the bass lines and figuring out like what they're doing, because it was very, very musical.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what else. Like my parents were, my mom, she was, you know, heavy in the church, so I was exposed to a lot of gospel music. And, you know, so seeing musicians at church play and checking out what they're doing like up front, that was like really like my first exposure to like live musicians and the concept of playing music with a certain conviction and going for a certain feeling and trying to raise an emotion and control the vibration in a room with music.
Yeah.
So I was very intrigued by that. But but just like a typical teenager, I was into like a lot of hip hop, a lot of R&B stuff on the radio, like early 90s R&B, that kind of stuff. You know,
when you were listening to all that stuff, did you start listening to jazz too, or did that come a little later when you were up in Chicago?
Yeah, I didn't really like start really getting exposed to jazz until I came to Chicago.
I was always interested in it. Go ahead.
Heard it on the radio, but I didn't really get to see it up close and experience it for real until I was like in Chicago.
Do you remember? I mean, when you were in Chicago, like that first bassist, like that you saw and went, "Oh my God, what the heck is this guy playing?"
Yeah, it was two main experiences. Like one, I went to see Branford Marsalis play at Orchestra Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that. Like at that time, I mainly just knew Branford from being on The Tonight Show and showing up on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air a couple times and doing the music video show he had. Yep. But I had no idea of the depth of his artistry. So I went and checked him out, and like I was like completely like I stepped into a different world, and you know, so that was one experience. And then the first time I went to the Chicago Jazz Festival, I can't even remember what year it was. It was like early 2000s, but I know like I think Carla Cook was on the main stage that year. Greg Osby, Jason Moran was out there. Stephon Harris could have been there, or I might have saw him at Orchestra Hall. But like a lot of that. Early to mid 2000s, Blue Note artists seemed to be at the Chicago Jazz Fest that year, and like I said, it was just music being played in a way that I just hadn't been exposed to, and it just floored me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who was the headliner? I think that year, Wayne Shorter.
Wayne
Shorter with Brian Blade was out there.
Yeah. I remember that. Yep.
But I heard that band. I was like, what is happening? Like. how can I do it? You know, like, what are they doing and how can I do it? You know, so I was on a quest from that point on, like, to figure this stuff out.
Isn't that interesting? Because that's why I ask, because there's always that one moment or a couple of moments that no matter how old of a musician anybody is or how accomplished they are, they remember that one or two moments when they were like, what the heck is going on? I need to do that. And that inspired them to then practice nonstop and really start to master their instrument. But they needed that little kick, and they just needed to, like, all of a sudden it was like the light went on even harder and went, whoa, what is that?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And you know, what's interesting too, is that you were going to school at Columbia College. And I mean, you're like the exact person that the Department of Cultural Affairs Special Events and the Jazz Institute would love to hear about, because the jazz festival that's programmed by them and put on by them inspired you to become a musician. I mean, that's you're like the poster child for what they're trying to do. So that's amazing. I'm glad that I asked you that question, because I think that's fascinating. And I think it's also really interesting that, you know, you picked out those, but also the fact that you were listening to all of the R&B stuff, all of the rap stuff, all of the hip hop stuff and everything, and jazz, because I'm a big believer in, now, I mean, all these genres just sort of mix together. I mean, is there really truly like a straight ahead jazz artist anymore? No, it's like, oh, well, that's Brad Meldow. That's Wayne Shorter. That's this guy, because there's so many influences that meld together. Like there's Robert Glasper. There's this guy, because they meld all these genres together that they're influenced by. And you're like the perfect example of that too, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause I, like, when I look at the music, I don't really like hear it as like different genres and different categorizations or anything like that. I just hear it as music and just stuff that I like, or stuff that I don't really like so much. The different like labels and categorizations, like I don't really consider that stuff until like after like I make something and I have to figure out like, okay, what am I going to do with it and how do I communicate to other people what it is. But but for me, it's like it's not really any lines between like gospel music and jazz and rap, you know, country music. Like all of that stuff is drawn from the same pot, you know.
Yep. It's good or it's not good. I mean, it's straightforward. Yeah. At least that's the way. I mean, I can listen to anything; it doesn't matter. But if it's not happening, I don't want to listen to it, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
so let's talk a little bit now. So then you're playing bass and you're doing that. When did you start playing professionally?
Like I was playing professionally a little bit in college, playing like some gospel things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I would say like once I got out of school, I moved to Indianapolis, and then I really started because at that point I had to earn a living. So I really started getting heavy into like gigging and working with other musicians. Like once I got to Indianapolis, because then it was like sink or swim because I was on my own for the first time, and so I had to make a few things work, you know. Yeah.
So you moved down to Indy. You were playing, so you're kind of playing a lot of different genres then, I would imagine, right?
Oh yeah, just playing whatever people need, you know. Jazz was my first love, so like I would actively seek out opportunities to play jazz. But even from the time I got here up to now, I play gospel all the time. I play jazz. Got my hip hop band. We travel and do different things and play locally. And then I do a lot of session work in all genres. So
how's the jazz scene in Indianapolis? I mean, I know the Jazz Kitchen, and I know there's a couple of other ones, but I mean, is it thriving down there? Because I know there's a lot of people that go down there and play, but they come back to Chicago. So I don't know how the scene is down there, like living there. What's that like?
It's pretty cool. The scene has like really been on an uptick since the time I got here. Like when I first moved here, it was about 2004. There's really only like a couple of places to play. You know, there's always been like a really good, strong community of musicians. That's never been a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But like now there seems to be like a lot of younger talent that's like, just like every time I go out, like I'm meeting people like, where'd this guy come from? Like, man, you know, and like when I first got here, it was like, you know, I wasn't like seeing new faces quite as often. But now it seems to be like, whenever I can go out, like I'm always like meeting new people like, man, I've been, like, where you been? Like how old are you? Like what's your story? So it's cool to see like a lot of like new talent coming up. Then there's like just different sections of the city that are being developed in ways that open themselves up to live music. So they kind of have like what they call these different cultural districts in Indianapolis, and they've been like putting a lot of money and resources into developing these districts, and in turn like these places have been opening more music venues and creating more opportunities for musicians to get out and play.
That's great.
So it's a growing thing. It's pretty good for the size of the city it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I know a lot of people that go down, and I know a lot of people that come from New York. They play in Minneapolis, Chicago, Indy. It's a great little loop now everybody can play in too, and kind of do the circuit like that, because there's so many different clubs in all the different cities, and they're not far away from each other at all. So it's kind of a nice little loop. Talk a little bit about, all right, so I'm fascinated. How did you meet Don Cheadle, and how did you get in the Miles Ahead movie? Because that's amazing to me. Is he from Indy? I mean, how did you meet him?
Man, that whole story was just kind of like a lucky situation that just kind of happened by chance almost. So when Don Cheadle was getting ready to make the Miles Ahead movie, he chose to shoot it in Cincinnati because the city just had like a certain, the look of the city kind of looks like 1950s New York, which is why he chose it.
Mm-hmm.
So they had like different like talent agencies and things in Cincinnati putting out word that, hey, we need, you know, we're doing casting, we need headshots, we need, just, you know, we need different musicians that are willing to audition for being in this movie. And so I do gigs in Cincinnati quite a bit, and some friends of mine over there were just kind of circulating emails saying, hey, they're getting ready to shoot this movie. supposed to be with Don Cheadle. It's going to be about Miles Davis, and they just want people to come in and audition for it. And, yeah, I just kind of just went and auditioned on a whim. Like, I had to stand on a long line I had to do a reading and a screen test. And, yeah, it was a total on a whim. I was like, well, I probably won't get it, but let me just, you know, just for fun, let me just go out and just try. You never know. At the very least, I am a young black bass player, and Miles had young black bass players in his band, so maybe there's some chance that I just kind of fit the profile of the type of person they might want. So I went in and did the audition. They had me read some of the script and do like a screen test where they wanted me to play bass on camera. And some weeks later, they gave me a call back and said, hey, you know, we like want to have you be in the movie. And
did you take your bass with you? I mean, was there like a whole line of like bass players waiting outside, waiting to go in, or was it just kind of like there had to be guys that probably didn't play bass, but they were auditioning for the part too, right? Just to see if they could get it or something.
Well, it is because like they had auditions for extras, they had auditions for like, of course, like regular cast, and then they had like a separate set of auditions for musicians.
Okay.
Don Cheadle was very like particular about like wanting like real working musicians in the film.
Good.
So So I actually had to like carry my own bass though to the audition. They had the auditions at a jazz club, but usually jazz clubs don't have a bass on site. They'll have like pianos and drums, but not necessarily a bass. So I, you know, had to like stand in line with my bass and go through the whole thing. You know, but it worked out. It was cool.
Man, well, that's amazing. And I mean, I remember watching some of the I don't know, it's a documentary, but just some of the background stuff. I mean, Don learned how to play trumpet so that he didn't look like he was faking the trumpet with Miles Davis, right? I mean, he learned how to play it, enough, right?
Yeah, he was actually like really good at trumpet. I mean, of course, you're not going to just pick up trumpet and be good as good as Miles,
right?
But the thing about Don Cheadle, he is like a multi-instrumentalist, which a lot of people don't really know. I think he plays like piano, saxophone, and some other instruments. So he's not like just coming from nowhere and just stumbling into the music. He understands jazz and musicianship already. Yeah. It was just a matter of him getting some trumpet chops. But he actually could play trumpet. Like if Don Cheadle was just somebody that lived in Indianapolis, I would call him for a gig. You know, he can play trumpet.
So you actually got to play with him, right? Because he was up on the bandstand. You guys were playing with him.
Yeah. He directed and starred in the movie. Right. So like the scenes, our scenes were like a rehearsal scene with Miles, and then it was like a performance scene with Miles. So we actually had to be on camera performing, you know, with Don Cheadle playing Miles. Huh. So we all played through. I think we played. I can't remember what tunes we played. I think we played Nefertiti, and we played So What and a couple other things. Robert Glasser was on there, kind of like a consultant. So, you know, I got to like play with him a little bit, and you know, he was there, kind of helping like with the props and everything to look like authentic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great, you know, great time. Like Don Cheadle was cool, definitely a good musician.
No, that's amazing. How long of a shoot was it that you were on?
Like I was on set for maybe about 3 days. I think the scenes that we shot, like each of them took maybe about at least like 2 to 4 hours to shoot each scene. But then like the time that I actually had to be on site was like dozens of hours because like, they were dealing with like hundreds of extras, wardrobe, just a whole lot of variables that go into making a movie. Like when you're watching it, like I never would even think about what all goes into it, but like the amount of time just having to be on site, you know.
Yeah
we definitely spent like dozens and dozens of hours just there, and you know,
isn't that amazing?
Several hours shooting.
It's amazing because you're right. I mean, you never think how long that stuff takes, but now you know why budgets are what the budgets are, because you're on set and you're like there, and there's so much background stuff that has to happen before they do the shoot that, you know, and you guys probably could have played those tunes. You could have been out of there in a half an hour, but.
Just playing the tunes was nothing, you know, like everybody that was there could play, but it's like, okay, we got to set up audio, got to set up light. Mm-hmm. Okay, position the camera this way. Okay, now let's test how it's going to look. Okay, now we got it. I like that. Let's shoot it. Okay, great. Now let's shoot it again. Let's try it from this angle. You know, so you would go through that whole thing like several times, and that process, the time of it just adds up, you know?
Oh, yeah. What, I'm always curious because, you know, with something like that, you go in, you're a musician, you're not trying to be an actor. You go in, you do the whole thing and all that. Did any other doors open up for you, like in the acting world or anywhere else because you did that movie? I mean, was there anything else come across your plate because of that specifically?
Mostly a lot more music work came out of it. I had like a couple opportunities to audition for a couple of things. I can't even remember what they were since then. But yeah, most of the opportunities came out of the music side. Like I met like a bunch of musicians that were there. J.D. Allen was actually the saxophone player that you hear when you watch the movie.
Ah, okay.
So like I eventually connected with him and we got to do some tour dates, you know. Mm-hmm. So I got more music opportunities than acting, which is fine for me because I don't aspire to be an actor. That was just a cool opportunity that basically fell in my lap and I just went for it, you know.
Did you hire Don Cheadle for a gig yet?
Maybe when we get out of this COVID thing, I'll call him up and see if
he's probably not doing anything right now. He might be available. All right, so let's talk about this other group, Native Son.
Sure.
Are you one of the founding members of it? Did you start it?
Yeah, I started it with two friends of mine. Actually, a version of it started slightly before I met my friends, Richard Sleepy Floyd, who's the drummer and one of the producers in the band, and my other guy, Bobby Young, who's the MC in the band. So they actually connected. They went to IU Bloomington, Indiana University in Bloomington.
Yep.
And they had kind of started getting into music together in college. And then shortly after that, I had moved to Indianapolis, and we all ended up living in Indianapolis and becoming friends and decided to do a hip-hop band together, and we eventually called it Native Son. So the version of it that exists now, I'm a founding member of.
So I'm intrigued because I listen to it. I really dig it. And the other thing I really dig is that there's live instruments on there along with electronic stuff, right? So, I mean,
yeah.
You know, talk a little bit about that. Is there a term for that? Is there like a term? You know, I've seen DJs a bunch of times, DJs playing with drummers or DJs playing with a sax player. Is there like a term for that?
I'm trying to figure out like what the perfect term is. Like, cause like I said, I don't really like care for like labeling music on the creative side, but when it's time to like market it and push it out to the people, you kind of need to help people identify it.
Yeah.
So we kind of get with it more as like alternative hip hop, live band hip hop.
That's I've heard that. You know, I've heard that before. Live band hip hop. I've heard that, I think, before.
Yeah, we kind of liken it to the Roots, even though we kind of, you know, of course we have our own thing that we're doing, but the Roots is like the premier hip hop band that has live instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, so it's like we haven't come. I don't feel like we've come up with the perfect identity for it yet. That's something that we're searching for, you know.
Where do you guys, because I'm curious, you know, I'm the director of programming and entertainment at this brand new art center that's going to be opening up in Chicago, and we're going to be doing like a house music series, we're going to be doing emerging artist stuff, we're also going to be adding in hip-hop and R&B and things like that into some of our programming. But I mean, what kinds of clubs are you guys playing at? What kind of venues are you guys playing at? Because this kind of music to me would appeal to a really wide audience, especially with the live instruments and playing the hip hop, you know, style, the grooves and all that stuff.
Right. So it's a pretty versatile group. Like we've done shows at the Jazz Kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and then we've also done shows. There's a big venue in Indianapolis called the Vogue. If you think of, like, in terms of Chicago, it's kind of like similar to the House of Blues.
Okay.
So we've done like those kind of stages. Like we've, Like, we did a show with Thundercat, you know. There's been, like, plenty of, like, other, like, touring bands that we've, like, offered, like, opening support for, like, you know, in that vein. So, like, you know, so we can do anything from, like, a jazz club that holds, like, 100 people to a room, a big, you know, a nice size stage venue with, that could hold, like, a couple thousand people.
Yeah, you know? I mean, because it seems like it would appeal to a lot of people. And I love, I mean, I'm listening to it, and I love the fact that there's live instruments, but then there's, it's like, you know, you're listening to it. It's not like overproduced electronic hip hop, which I'm not a huge massive fan of, because you can tell that it's overproduced and there's a lot of, you know, electronic stuff happening. This is just almost like it's raw. You can really feel it more to me with the live instruments, you know, that's how I heard it. That's how I kind of dig it. You know, I mean, so, but to me, I could see that at the Jazz Kitchen, actually. I could see that at other venues and being able to be real versatile. How do you guys go about creating the music for that? I mean, is it just a matter of sitting down, working out a beat, and then working off of that, or how does that work?
Yeah, for the most part, there's a total of four of us, and all of us make beats. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're constantly turning out musical ideas in the form of hip hop beats, and we're sharing them amongst each other. And usually Bobby, who's the MC in the band, he'll kind of decide like what things he's most inspired by as far as like writing lyrics for. And we'll kind of put everything in the pot. Bobby will say, hey, I'm really feeling this. I really want to write something like this. I got a verse for this, and we'll just roll with it and keep adding on and adding additional elements to it until we feel like it's something that we want to present to the people.
So it sounds great. So I encourage everybody to go check it out. Should we send them over to BrandonMeeksMusic.com to check that out too? Or is there another website we should send them over? Is there a Native Son website specifically?
Oh, we're in the process of building a new website. So, yeah, feel free to have people come to BrandonMeeksMusic.com. I have, like, the Native Son Project there on my website as well. And then you can also go to Native Son Live on Instagram, okay. Native Son Live on Facebook, you know. And you can find us there as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the other projects you have happening. Now, I was reading through everything and going over your website, and then I saw that you're doing interactive Family Room Live, interactive video creation. What's that? It looks like you're performing live, right? It's like you're in your family room.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's interesting. I started that about a year ago, and then now we're in a place where, like, if you want to do a gig, that's the only way you can do it, you know?
Yeah, right. I know. You were like ahead of the curve there at that point.
So it's kind of interesting that things kind of played out like that. But that's a concept that I came up with about a year ago because, like I said, I'm an internet guy, and I'm constantly pushing my brand and my music out online, always building my email list, trying to build a social media following. And when you do that, the people that become attracted to the music are so dispersed. Like, I have people like just all over the U.S., up in Canada, some over in the U.S., in the U.K., and in various other places. Mm-hmm. So people are so dispersed, but it's not quite at that critical mass where I could do a tour necessarily and go to all of these different cities and draw a huge crowd. Mm-hmm. But I do have dedicated listeners in a lot of places. So I figured the best way to kind of bring everybody together is to just do something digital, online, maybe just put together some live shows at my house and broadcast it, you know, and bring people together that way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, ultimately I would let that grow into a thing where, you know, eventually I could do tours in some of the places where I have like a dedicated listening base.
Well, and that's the thing, and that almost leads us back to where we started, right? Because of this COVID-19 situation and how a lot of musicians, they're going to come out of this. I think there's going to be two sides of the whole thing. There's going to be the musicians that have figured out how to connect with an audience, how to grow their audience, how to connect with an audience outside of just their small little home base and grow that, and then continue to engage with them over the next month, 2 months, 10 months, year and a half, 2 years, and grow an audience that way, and turn this online performance stuff into a regular part of their performance stuff. Even when you can get back into the clubs, people have to take a dedication and say, hey, you know what, once or twice a week, I'm going to perform live because it's working great and I'm reaching all these people and I'm able to connect and engage and all that stuff. And then right. There's going to be the other guys that don't do that and are waiting for everything to go back to the way it was. And I don't think it's ever going to go back to the way it was. So I think that everything's going to be pushed out online, and whether you do it in a certain way where you can connect and engage, you already are doing that. So it's amazing. And I love the fact that you're talking about it because, you're reaching people that you would never reach if you weren't doing what you're doing online. I mean, you're playing in Indianapolis, right. You're never going to reach somebody in Canada because they're going to be like, who's that? But now right. You're connected
absolutely.
With them.
Absolutely. And it's really cool because, like you say, like the time we live in now, I feel like this is the best time in history to be a musician because we really have, like, full control over our destinies at this point. Like, we don't really have to. If you can learn, like, some marketing principles and just some basics about, like, how to reach an audience, like, utilizing the internet, there's really nobody that can, like, stand in your way as a gatekeeper and say, well, you can't have, you know, you can't go any further than this, or you can't do certain things, you can't reach this level. You can really take control of your destiny and go as far as you want with your music. Because, like, once you can reach the people and bring people into your fan base, that's something that you really have control over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, get your email list up, get your social media up. I feel like the email, that's something that you're really on, because with Facebook and YouTube and Instagram, that's somebody else's website, so they can always kind of mitigate how far you can go. But you got, like, a strong email list. And in addition to having, like, the strong social media following, like, you really hold all the cards, because you can then go to a music festival or a club or a venue and demonstrate that you have a high number of people that are behind you and engaging with your content and want to come and see whatever it is that you have to offer. So that becomes your currency, you know.
Well, that's right, and in this day and age, it's going to be so much more powerful to have to be able to do that, because, you know, I don't think a lot of people are going to feel comfortable right off the bat coming back out the way everybody used to go out anyway. So you're going to need that connection. You're going to need to be able to connect to your database and have that relationship where they want to come and see you live because they just love what you're doing. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, and you're absolutely right. It's like, it's the music business, and that business part you have total control over, and that's the beauty of the online stuff. And to your point, the email lists and all of the connectivity that we can do on social and all the creative stuff that we can do, you know? So, I mean, absolutely. Right. And I love the fact that you're talking about it, and I'm not even prodding you to talk about it because you and I are on the same exact wavelength on this whole thing. So it's perfect.
It's so cool. Cause if you think about, like Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker and all those guys that we looked up to, they really had no avenues for, like, getting their music out. They had to go to, you know, record labels and kind of deal with the business the way the record label kind of wanted to deal it out to them. You know, you had certain people that could command certain things that they wanted more so than others, but it's like they still had to go through those gatekeepers to get where they wanted to go. Like, our generation really doesn't have to do that. If we have a good music, a good product, a good presentation, like, we can really go straight to the people with it. And like you said, things aren't, I don't see things, like, just going back to the way they were. I think at some point music venues will be open again and we'll be able to do live shows, but I don't think it's going to be quite like it was before. So, like, the more musicians can kind of really take advantage of this time we have now to really start getting their feet wet and directly building, like, their audiences, the better it's going to be in the long time.
Yep. No, I you and I are, you know, you're preaching to the choir here, because I, yeah. I totally agree. Well, you know what, Brandon, it's been great talking to you. I'm glad you took some time today, man. I told you, we've been talking for 45 minutes. We could have been talking for 4 hours. So I didn't go down a couple of wormholes, but I'm glad that we made this connection, and I'm glad that you're on. And, yeah. You know, we got to thank our friend Samantha Hudson for connecting you and I together, because, It's great that some of our listeners and viewers are digging what we're doing here and connecting me with other people that I should connect with. So I'm glad that you and I are connected now. I want to encourage everybody to head over to BrandonMeeksMusic.com because you've got to check it out. He's got some of his own recordings up there. And then, of course, Native Son recordings are up there. And he's constantly doing more and more stuff. So you can check everything out. He's got the links to the Family Room concerts that he's doing as well. And, man, you know, what a pleasure, man. And
likewise.
Hopefully you and I will see each other in person, and maybe we'll connect, and I can get you over to Epiphany Center for the Arts when we can actually have live people in the room. That would be fun, too, to have one of your groups up here at some point.
Yeah, that would be great. I was actually working on a show with Chicago artist Sam Trump, like, right before COVID hit. So maybe we can continue putting that show together once things are starting to open up on the music side a little bit more.
I would love to. We should talk. I'm going to start putting together the fall schedule and put it tentatively. And in case something happens, we can adjust. But yeah, let's talk offline. I'd love to connect about that. I know Sam, and I think that would be a dynamite. So let's make that happen.
Cool.
Awesome.
Cool.
All right,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you being on, and we will talk soon. Thanks again, Brandon.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Brandon Meeks, man, that was a great interview. I told him before we came on, I said, you know what? I know that he and I could probably talk for like 4 or 5 hours, so I was going to try to stay focused on what was happening. And it's fascinating stuff, and I love the fact, I mean, he's the younger generation coming up. He's interested in all the different genres, but he's making it happen. And that story about him getting on the Miles movie, Miles Ahead, man. If you haven't seen that movie, you should check it out, because it's, you know, Don takes a few liberties with some of the plot stuff that you know, I don't know if all of that happened with Miles, but it's still real interesting. And you get to see Brandon playing the role of Ron Carter. Can't beat that. All right, so before we continue to cruise along here, I am going to suggest everyone head over to ChicagoMusicReveal.com. All of the past episodes are up over there. We're going to be announcing the rest of this week very shortly. We are going to confirm a special guest for Friday's Blues Friday. Of course, Dave Katzman's going to be on with his Chicago Blues and Beyond report, along with a very special blues musician guest, which I'm hoping to announce later tonight. I've got to check my email and see if we got the confirmation. And then, of course, we've got great guests throughout the rest of the week. So stay tuned for all of that great stuff. I appreciate everyone watching this. It's Tuesday, so tomorrow's Wednesday already. We're cranking along. The sun's out. I think we're going to have a beautiful week. So everybody stay safe. Everybody stay healthy. And as I always say here on the show, if you like what you're hearing, please tell your neighbors, tell your family, call the grandkids. Chicago Music Revealed right here, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, every day, Monday through Friday. And again, thanks for watching. And until next time, I will see you somewhere out on the scene or here tomorrow night. Oh, my music ended.